Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the TT Podcast. It's time for our team of the season, the annual episode where we name the best GC leader, domestique, sprinter, and classics rider of 2023. We sing the praises of some of the unsung heroes, and we officially award the race of the year. Joining me to do so, and inevitably to scrap over our nominees, is my co-host Tom. Tom, how are you?
I enjoyed that. We officially award the race of the year. It sounds like it's official, isn't it? You're really bigging us up, making it sound like we are the UCI giving out the awards.
Well, this is the thing. I think there was a lot of confusion and frustration about the recent Velo d'Or awards, where Jonas Vingegaard won Rider of the Year, and people felt that Mathieu van der Poel was snubbed. So
Be a bit of a spoiler alert with some of my selections there.
Yeah, off the back of that, I think that we should now become the official awarders of these things, because people have lost faith in the Velo d'Or.
Yeah, right. Should we go straight into Rider of the Year then? Do you just want to do
that? No. Let's do that last. No, let's do some pleasantries, Tom.
Pleasantries.
You're in Italy.
I'm in Milan. Yep. It seems to be a different location every time we record at the moment, but. I'm in Italy, hopefully here to stay. I'm just trying to smooth out some visa. I don't have a visa at the moment, so that's really the one visa issue I'm working on. The idea is now to never leave Italy again.
No return flight.
Well, maybe at Christmas.
Okay. That's exciting. Let's hope that the Italian Foreign Office or the Italian Home Office aren't listening to this and clamping down on you not having a visa.
Is it the Ministry of the Interior or something? I can't remember what it's called, but yeah, the equivalent.
Okay. And you're settled in well? You're enjoying Milan?
As you know, I've been coming back and forth to Milan for about 8 years anyway, so yeah.
Okay. So it feels like home already.
Yeah, been out for a run this morning. New shoes have hurt my feet. Don't know what more information you need there.
You know what? This is reassuring. I think there's obviously your answers here, and no offense to you, are quite monotonous. Yeah. And I think that is testament to the fact that you have clearly settled in and are now one of the locals, that you're just like, well, it's just daily life now.
It's just Sunday. Yeah. As we record Sunday. It's Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We can jump into the official awards now, if you like.
Let's go. Yeah. What everyone's been waiting for.
So this year we have decided to separate the men's and women's teams of the year. Previously we've merged them, but I think we both agreed it's hard to do both pelotons justice when we merge them like that. As always, we have not discussed these, so everything that I hear now from Tom is new information to me. I think I've followed cycling the most I have ever in my life this year, and Tom, you are quite the opposite.
Yeah, I do not dispute that at all. I have followed it the least I have of any year since I got into the sport about 15 years ago.
Okay, so I'm just putting that out there now for the listener, just so you know who to go with as the authority here, if you please. Which way do you want to do this? Let's do the men's team first. So we've got a classics rider, sprinter, domestique, and a GC leader. Which way should we do first? Should we do the GC leader first? Start with the big one?
I'm quite happy with my GC choice. I think it's quite simple, really.
Yeah, I think we're not going to fall out about this one. Go on.
I've gone with Jonas. You win the Tour de France. You're the best GC rider.
Yeah. We could move on from there, but we'll linger on it for a little bit. I think the way in which he won the Tour de France was so resounding that you cannot possibly think of someone else for this role here. He won it by almost 7.5 minutes, which is, I'd completely forgotten about.
Yeah, well, you would, wouldn't you? Because there was almost no theatre to it, because he made it look easy. And you say, well, obviously there are three Grand Tours and there's various 1 week stage races, but the Tour is more important. There's not been someone who's shone across multiple Grand Tours this season either, I don't think. And so you win the Tour, especially in that manner, I think it's a very easy pick.
I agree. He basically had the Tour wrapped up from stage five, I think.
Yeah.
The thing I think that makes him unpopular is, if we can say that Jonas Vingegaard is unpopular.
I don't like him.
Okay. let that speak for that then. We're not going to beat around it here. I think it's the fact that he concentrates all of his efforts on that one race of the year. he's not doing the Tadej Pogačar April block where he's smashing Flanders and then trying to win the Tour. It's very much like, no, I'm training up until those 3 weeks, and then I'm going to perform at my best. Didn't bother doing the Worlds afterwards. I think that kind of makes it it's very systematic.
Well, I get that. That's what he's good at.
But I think
we can't all be as multi-talented as Tadej Pogačar is. Like, I don't think Jonas has the option to go for the classics in the early season, or even to target the Worlds at the end of the season. I think the Tour is his one thing. It's what he's best at. And I think put all his eggs in that one basket.
That's true. And also, no offense to Sepp Kuss, but Jonas could have won the Vuelta as well.
Well, yeah.
He didn't, so we can't, no. Obviously. But I think the jury is quite decided on who had the ability to win that race and who didn't.
Yeah, which I think we've covered before, and I imagine everyone listening has covered multiple times since the Vuelta.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on. Sprinter, another one that I think is a shoo-in.
For the men?
Yeah.
Should I just put it out there straight away?
Just say his name.
Jasper Philipsen. Yep.
Unbeatable at the Tour de France. Again, this is very Tour de France focused, but I think our whole sport is very Tour de France focused. So.
Having said that, I mean, he won. I was looking at the Palmares earlier before we recorded because, as usual, this got sprung on me relatively late notice, and then I didn't do the research I should have done. But you look at what he's won this year. I've got it now. He won the Bruges de Pan. He won Chelles de Prisse. He won. There's a couple of other races with really Dutch names here. Four stages at the Tour, stages at Tirreno Adriatico. The Tour of Turkey, which is normally good for the sprinters. And he was second at Roubaix.
The Roubaix one's very easy to forget.
Yeah.
I think what Philipsen has done this year is, I mean, usually we see this kind of top tier of sprinters in cycling. You know, you've got a couple of riders jostling. Recent years has been like Ewan and Groenewegen, Kittel and Greipel. I think now we're back in those Cav HTC kind of days where there is one sprinter who is unrivaled.
Assuming he stays upright, no one's getting near him.
If he stays upright and he has a lead out man that can help him a bit in the final, he will win.
Yeah, and he did every time. I honestly did not even consider anyone else.
Yeah, I agree. I you know what? I couldn't think of anyone else that I would pick. Usually we would have a kind of debate whether we could have Wout van Aert in this one, but van Aert hasn't really been sprinting this year.
No, and then as you mentioned Ewan, but you didn't really see much from Jakobsen either. Groenewegen, I thought, flattered to deceive. Philipsen did look a class above, but I do feel the other sprinters just weren't really at their best either, so probably a combination of the two, him being better than usual and the rest of them being worse.
I think you're right. I mean, the nearest person to him this year was probably Mads Pedersen. I think the real statistic that speaks for the depth of the sprint field this year is that Brian Coquard was third in the points jersey race at the Tour de France.
Can't take anything away from Brian Coquard on this podcast, can you?
Yeah, sorry, I shouldn't have taken a swipe at him. Domestique, let's go for that one, because I think this one is less up in the air. More up in the air, rather.
See, I'm a bit torn on this because, we'll put it out there, regular listeners will know my ability to go for the unsung hero every year is pretty poor. I tend to pick people who are very sung, and so I think there's probably a lot of overlap between unsung heroes and domestiques. Again, just by the nature of the sport, domestiques do fly under the radar. So not wanting to spoil anything further down the line, I'm going to ask you to give me your domestique.
Okay. Right. So the difficult one here is Sepp Kuss, right? Because usually, Tom, and I don't want to shoot at your choices on this podcast in recent years, you usually pick your domestique of the year in the first week of January. And it has, I think, for the last 2 years been Sepp Kuss. And he has proved you right every year and been very, very strong.
But is he a domestique now?
Is he a domestique now? This year, again, he was phenomenal. He rode all three Grand Tours, was very, very helpful to Roglic, very, very helpful to Vingegaard. And then he won the Vuelta himself and turned into a leader. I don't think we can call somebody who wins a Grand Tour, we definitely can't give them domestique of the year. So,
see, I wanted to. That is a name, one of the first names that I...
Well, you had it down in January, I'm sure.
But as you just said, Jonas Vingegaard could have won that Vuelta, and so could Primoz Roglic.
So you think he's still firmly in the domestique lane?
I think he's been given a little 3 weeks to shine, and then everything will revert to type, and the team will tell him to get back where he belongs pretty quickly.
Okay, but we're concentrating on 2023, and I don't think we can say Sepp Kuss is a domestique at this current time. My pick is UAE Team Emirates' Marc Soler.
Yeah.
There was a moment, I made a note of this in July, which is coincidentally when the Tour de France happens. There was a moment on the Col de la Loz where Tadej Pogacar was in extreme difficulty. And the man who dropped back and towed him all the way to the line, helped him on that stage, was Marc Soler. And Tadej Pogacar gave a really good quote afterwards, where he said, every time Marc Soler looked at me behind on the Col de la Loz, with his eyes, his scary eyes, that was a terrifying scary moment. Eyes. And I think that speaks volumes to Soler. I mean, Soler is a rider who left Movistar with a lot of... Well, at the time, Movistar had his own GC ambitions, was hoping to get more leadership roles. This year, he hasn't had that, but has worked tirelessly in service for, you know, Tour de France, it was for Adam Yates and Tadej Pogacar, and he was happy to fulfill that role.
You're definitely right when you talk about Marc Soler himself could be... I mean, he's still young. Is he? He's not old, is he?
He's not old. I don't think... Look, you wouldn't be signing him on Football Manager.
But no, I think what you're talking about, he is a man who should be coming into his peak years now. And therefore...
He's 30 in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, 29. That's young. Older than me, which is a big distinction to make, but still young. So you're right. That's someone who's coming into his prime years and probably should have GC ambitions of his own. So to sit back and take on a domestique role shows a willingness to work for the team, which I guess it reminds me of Sepp Kuss there as well, in that he is an incredibly
talented...
All
roads lead to Sepp Kuss.
Oh, they do, yeah. They all lead to... what's the place? It was in Colorado where I've seen all those pictures of him getting on the pints. Anyway, yeah. Someone who... you know, probably does have the talent to go after a GC themselves, certainly one day, but is willing to take that step back and work for other riders in the team.
So have you got a rider you want to throw in for Domestique, or are you going to agree with me on Soler?
I'll give you Soler. I mean, I still think it's Kuss.
Okay. Right. I've told you why it can't be Kuss, but I appreciate that you're standing by him.
Classics, well, Kuss, basically, Kuss cannot be my unsung hero this year either because he won the Vuelta.
I would go out to say Kuss is the most sung rider of the year.
Exactly.
So if you put him as the unsung hero, I'm going to end this podcast right now. Right at that moment. As soon as you say his name, I'm hitting end.
Right. Classics rider. I, again, didn't have too much difficulty with this one.
Mathieu van der Poel?
Yep.
Okay, cool. I think... Look, we could list what he's won this season, and I will briefly.
Yeah.
Milan-San Remo, Roubaix, World Championships. They're the three big ones. Wasn't that
add,
great? At the
add
Grand
to team? That, second at E3, second at Flanders. Was there another one where he was up there? Can't remember. No, there wasn't. But
for me, sorry to interrupt you, Tom.
Yeah.
For me, the key thing here isn't that he won San Remo, Roubaix, and Worlds. Well, I guess it is that he won that. But it's the fact that those are three very different races that require very different tactics to win them. Roubaix is an all-out intense effort. Milan-San Remo is a concentration game with an incredible burst of intensity at the end. And Worlds is, well, this year, the course at Worlds had so many corners. Very, very tactical, very, very difficult, very technical. And he thrived on all three of those.
Yeah, I mean, the record book will never show this, but I still think he was very lucky at Roubaix.
You think so? What, for to not fall or just to get away?
Yeah, well, that little incident at the end where I can't remember who he was with. I thought maybe, you know, he didn't do anything wrong, but it didn't look like he was going to get to the line on his own. And then all of a sudden he did.
Yeah, there was a thing where Degenkolb crashed, right?
Yeah. Just
and then
a racing
Wout had a puncture in the final couple of kilometers, right? Out of the Carrefour de l'Arbre. Yeah, that rings a bell now. Okay, maybe it was fortunate. But you know, you make your own luck on Roubaix.
Oh, you do in Roubaix as well. And then, as you say, at the Worlds, coming from a cyclocross background, you thrive on that sort of course, don't you?
yeah, it was, I mean, it's testament to him, I think, that you go in as the favorite for that course and win it.
Well, I think it said as well, like, he was targeting three races this year. He had three races in mind and he won all three of them.
Mm-hmm. I think shout out to Tadej Pogačar in this category as well. This is, I think, the one where he could have got in our team. When he won Flanders, Amstel and Flesch, that April patch, he was so, so dominant. Had he gone on to win Liège, I think he could have toppled Mathieu here. But he broke his wrist at Liège and then focused on stage racing.
Yeah. Well, you talk about him stage racing as well. I mean, obviously, they're not the classics, but he won Paris-Nice and then he won Tirreno Adriatico. Oh, no, sorry, that's Roglic. I just saw a Slovenian flag there. So he won Paris-Nice. He won Paris-Nice and then, as you said, later in the season, concentrated on stage racing. And yeah, whatever. Coming back from a broken wrist against Jonas Vingegaard in full form. He probably didn't have the tour that he wanted, but Tadej Pogačar is Tadej Pogačar. It's very difficult to overlook him.
I agree. Someone who we have overlooked here is Wout van Aert. And interestingly, I didn't consider him at all this year.
No, and you know what? I'm not going to say him, but he almost did get a little look in as being an unsung hero this year, Wout van Aert.
Oh, God.
And then I was just like, no, I can't, because it's Wout van Aert. There's no way I can call him an unsung hero. But it's like, he's had one of those seasons, though, where no one's taken any notice of him.
You know what? I would have given you Sepp Kuss, you absolutely couldn't have had.
Yeah.
Wout van Aert, I would have humoured you on.
Yeah. So I have got his name written in my notes with a little question mark next to it going, should I? And I don't think I will. We'll see.
I hope you don't.
Yeah.
Women's team of the year. So that's our men's team of the year. We've gone with Jonas Vingegaard, Marc Soler, Jasper Philipsen, and Mathieu van der Poel.
Yep.
It's a good team.
Honestly, I think it picks itself. There's not actually been that much debate over that one. Maybe on the domestique, but yeah.
Women's team of the year. Now, I have resisted naming SD Works riders for all of these. We could have, and very easily, and probably should have, but I just don't like, you know, when you're watching football and they pick, like, you know, the Man United and Man City combined 11 and it's all Man City players, and I'm like, boring. So maybe I should have awarded it on their merits, but I've not done that. Anyway, that's a warning. GC leader, have you gone for Demi Vollering as well?
I haven't, actually.
Ah, okay. We have our first real disagreement here. Go on.
Because I was looking at the, the women's results. I've given it to Annemiek van Vleuten because I was looking at Grand Tours and quite simply, she won the Giro and the Vuelta.
Yeah, for consistency.
Yeah, which winning two, even though Demi Vollering won the Tour, I think two beats one.
Two certainly does beat one. I think the issue is that the one is quite a big one.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think Van Vleuten was, I mean, dominant at the Giro Donna. She won by like 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. Vuelta Feminina, she won dramatically on Lagos de Covadonga. With the seconds counting back in the fog. That was a brilliant win. At the Tour de France, though, she came really unstuck. And I think Demi Vollering was just so dominant at that race that if I wanted a GC leader on my team, I would have gone for Demi Vollering.
That's fair enough. And yeah, as you say, we're going just on this season, but I think maybe past form, you'd give it to Van Vleuten as well. Obviously...
100%, hands down. Yeah. But I think this year at the Tour de France Femme avec Zwift, and I mean this with no disrespect, it was the first time I have ever seen Annemiek van Vleuten look her age.
Yeah, and you're right. She did crack, but...
It's been very easy to forget over the last few years that she is like 13, 14 years older than the riders she's competing against. And she has handed their asses to them up until this July, where I saw her kind of floundering on the Tourmalet, like genuinely struggling for the first time at a Grand Tour that I've seen that. It was a really real moment, and it was really cool because people don't like dominance. Like, people like it when riders crack. Like, that's why everyone loved Tadej Pogačar when he cracked on the Col de la Loz. And I felt the same here. It's like your heroes appear human, and it was cool, but Vollering was the best GC leader.
But would you not begrudge her that, given that she's won the other two women's Grand Tours in the year?
Look, I kind of agree with you. I've written in my notes here, there is an argument for AVV.
Okay.
Domestique. Did we do domestique? No, we did sprinter. Right, sprinter. Do you want to go first on the sprinter?
I assume we've got the same name here.
Have you gone Lorena Weebus?
I have.
So this is one of the ones where I've snubbed an SD Works rider.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think the case for Lorena Weebus makes itself. So I'm interested to hear what you've got to counter that.
Yeah, look, I think it probably is Lorena Weebus. But I don't want to give them to all SD Works riders, as I've said. So I've given it to Charlotte Cool because I think this year has been a very strong breakout for her. Won two stages at the UAE Tour, beating Lorena Weebus there. Mm-hmm. She won... I think she won the overall at the Ride London Classique, which everyone knows is a huge, huge race on the calendar. The Tour de
Why
France
is it called the Classique? Why has it got a French name?
I don't know. I don't know. And it's not even, it's not like it's a Classique. It's a three-stage thing. So
yeah.
the thing that eluded Charlotte Cool was that big win. It was the Tour de France stage win that I thought she would get that she didn't get.
Who did get it?
Lorena Weebus got it.
Yeah.
look, it probably, on paper, Lorena Weebus is probably the strongest sprinter this year, but big shout out.
By virtue of having an SD Works jersey, she's ineligible for any awards from you.
Sadly, yes.
Yeah.
And big shout out to Charlotte Cool. Domestique of the year, go on.
I'll be honest, I'm going to have to hand over to you again. Same problem as with the men.
Okay, right. I'll take away on this one. Again, no SD Works rider here.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen debate on Twitter recently, or on X rather, about whether
the artist formerly known as Twitter.
Yeah, whether Marlon Rusa could win Domestique of the Year. I had her in my contenders for this category, but this year she's been probably quite clearly a leader. She won Itzulia. She is the rider that kind of plows on the front for the team, but she's considered a leader, so I don't think we could have her.
I'm looking at Marlon Rusa here. She won Gent-Wevelgem, she won Itzulia, and she won the Tour de Suisse.
Yeah, that's not domestique levels.
That's the same problem as naming Sepp Kuss as a domestique this year.
It is, and we're not naming either. So I have gone with a very general category, the Movistar team at the Tour de France Femme.
The whole team.
The entire team. No. I could name a few names, like Paolo Patino, Aude Bianique, Liana Lipper at times as well was mm-hmm. doing this. It's probably more Aude Bianique sort of rider who, I mean, that team at the Tour de France Femme, there was such a good, and excuse my use of shoddy vocabulary, such a good vibe about them, right? And when they won, it was a real team win. There was a stage when Emma Norsgaard won in Blagnac, Aude Bianique was in like inconsolable tears. And I think that is testament to being a great domestique, is crying when your teammate wins.
Yeah, that's fine. But these are the official definitive awards. And if you're going to award them purely on vibes, that's fine.
Okay, good. Right. That one's sorted. Classics Rider of the Year. I'll let you lead on this one. And I'm allowing SD right. Works riders for this one.
Good, because I have gone with Demi Vollering for this.
Oh, right. Yes, of course, because you went for Annemiek for your GC leader.
Yeah, so Annemiek got my GC leader, and Demi Vollering, you win in the Ardennes, you get my vote. That's basically how it works.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? Yeah. So I couldn't choose Vollering for this one because I went for her as my GC leader, as you'll remember mm-hmm. from less than 5 minutes ago. I've gone with Lotte Kopecky because it's very similar logic to the Mattia van der Poel one. She was the favorite to win at Worlds. She won Worlds. She also won Flanders, which was a massive, massive race for her, being a Flandrian.
Is that the word? What do you say in English? In English?
Flandrian. Yeah.
Flemish.
Yeah, but no. But the cycling work version is you say a Flandrian.
But isn't that French? Oh, I don't know. Doesn't matter. Off topic.
Maybe you don't.
Yeah.
Anyway, someone can X us about this.
I'll put this on X when we finish recording. Yep.
I'll put this on X.
Yeah.
Okay. No, but I I've written there is a strong case for Demi Vollering here.
So I've gone with Vollering because she won the three Ardennes races, Amstel Gold, Flèche Wallonne, and Liège. And she also beat Lotta Kopecky to the line in Strada at that weird finish where they came in together.
Oh, that was so good.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Unsung hero. So, right, we've gone with... Okay, we don't have an agreed team on that one, but I'm happy with both teams.
I think we've made convincing cases.
I think we have. Yeah. Sadly, the official awards have been not officially appointed there, but we've got it. On to our unsung hero.
Okay. I'll cross out Wout van Aert's name.
Yeah, go on. This is your opportunity to rattle me and make my blood boil. So I'm handing over the mic to you.
Great. I'm not sure about this one, but the first name I've got is Adam Yates.
Adam Yates is mine.
Oh, right. There we go. Oh, my God. This has never happened before.
Go on.
Well, I've just got the list of what you did this year. I've got third at the UAE Tour, one in Romandy.
Third at the UAE Tour.
Yeah.
The first listed thing that he achieved this year.
Well, they're in chronological order.
Okay.
And that is like the first race of the season.
Yeah.
Because I think Simon Yates was second at the Tour Down Under, which is actually...
Let's not focus on these. Yeah. Move along.
So third at UAE, one Romandy, second at the Dauphiné, third at the Tour, and then late in the season, one in one of those Canadian ones at the GP Classique de Montreal or whatever it's called. And that is despite me never really having seen him on screen once.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. My thinking as well. If you had said to me before I started kind of researching for this episode, if you had said to me what did the best British Grand Tour performance this year, I'd have said Geraint Thomas, Giro d'Italia. And then...
Which is arguably true.
No, but then I look into it and I think, actually, Adam Yates was so good, so quietly good at the Tour de France this year, winning that first stage... Mm-hmm. His third place was pretty guaranteed at that race. And then in fourth place was his brother.
Yeah, they do like to dovetail like that, don't they?
So I thought that was really cool. And I agree with you that he hasn't been very sung this year.
No, I'm still in complete shock that I've managed to pick a good one.
I know. Have you got any more?
The other one I've got, similar to your Movistar thing, I've basically got any domestique at Jumbo-Visma, who is, you know, anyone on that team who isn't one of the three Grand Tour winners this year, because no one's paid attention to any of them, given all the drama that's happened with that front three.
Yeah, your likes of Christoph Laporte, Nathan van Hooijdonk.
Dylan van Baarle is the other name I've got here.
Yeah. I've also got a Jumbo-Visma rider here from the women's peloton, mm-hmm. Anna Henderson.
Yep.
Fourth in the TT at Worlds. She was hoping for a top 15 in that race. She told her coach before that if she got a single digit next to her race result, well, as her race result, she would be delighted. And she came fourth. She's also got a shed load of top tens in the early season classics. And I think I remember her putting on Instagram at some point that she was doing her best numbers this season. So I think
surely
she
the first
is
a... person to ever be delighted with fourth place.
I think she is a very much next season going to be challenging for the likes of Flanders, Gent-Wevelgem, those races.
Absolutely. I don't dispute that at all. We've done this very well today.
Wow. Sunday, the day of peace. We should record on Sundays more often, Tom. We should probably record more often, full stop, to be honest. But Race of the year.
I've got two.
This is our final category. I have four.
Okay. I have got the Giro for the men. That Roglic beating Geraint Thomas. I hated it. Hated every second, because I think we all knew it was coming and we all wanted G to win, but it was exciting.
Wow. It takes a real person to list something that they hated as one of the races of the season.
Yeah, and the other race I've got is Alison Jackson winning the Paris-Roubaix Femme.
Yeah, that's, I'll be honest, the top one that I've got here as well. That was so good and so unpredictable and such a worthy winner. From the early breakaway, she worked the hardest in the breakaway group, showed all her cards. She was like, this is how strong I am. Do you guys want to ride with me? Because this is the best opportunity you're going to get a top 10 at Roubaix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then she went and rolled them all in the sprint.
Which no one saw coming.
Yeah, but she was the strongest rider in that group, but it was kind of like she'd given so much to get to that point that I think if she had just tried to kick and not managed to at all, everyone would have been like, fair enough. She was the reason this break succeeded. She deserves so much credit, but another rider wins. That's just racing. That's how racing works. But not on that day in April.
No, That was a great race. I mean, as you say, when Roubaix comes together, something like that, the men's race was, I mean, I love Mathieu van der Poel winning it, but probably a little less tense this year. But Roubaix generally is the race. I would say, you know, 7 times out of 10, you're probably picking Roubaix as the best race of the year just because it is what it is.
Yeah, no. And it was a fantastic addition, especially with the tension of Lotte Kopecky bearing down on them, entering the velodrome before Jackson had crossed the line. Mm-hmm. I remember standing there on the artificial grass inside the velodrome and watching it. And that was the moment that I thought, this breakaway is staying away here. All the way up until then, I thought Kopecky's going to catch them, fly by them. That was the moment where I was like, the breakaway's got it. And then Jackson won.
They've done it. Yeah. So on that note, before we wrap up.
No, I've got a few more.
Have you got a few more?
Well, yeah, we'll go with some honorable mentions for the race of the year. Although actually, I think my race of the year, I'm teetering between two. So the other honorable mentions that I wanted to do were, and one, as I said, that I think, it for me, rivals Alison Jackson's win at Roubaix. So I'll give you the one before that doesn't rival it, which is Emma Norsgaard's win into Blagnac on stage 6 of the Tour de France Femmes.
Which you already talked about that earlier, didn't you?
Yeah, we spoke about her earlier. I think it was a 3-rider break. Again, similar to Alison Jackson, she did a lot of the work in that. It got down to 7 seconds inside the final kilometer, the gap back to the break, to the peloton. And then Norsgaard opens up her sprint with 600 meters to go. 600 meters to go is a ridiculous place to open up your sprint.
Can you call that a sprint?
It was a sprint. She sprinted out of the saddle, 600 meters.
Wow.
And held them off. And it held off like an on-charging peloton led by Anna Henderson for Marianne Vos, who was getting desperate, hadn't won a stage yet, didn't win a stage at the Tour de France Femmes. And Emma Norsgaard, by herself, having been in the break all day, held them off and won.
Held off Marianne Vos.
Held off everyone. SD Works, Marianne Vos. That, for me, I was, again, stood there at the finish line, and that was the stage of that race that I got genuine goosebumps.
And yet you have another one that's even better.
Yeah, another one's even better. Again, another one I was there for. A track cycling one, Tom.
Oh, wow, here we go.
The individual pursuit at the World Championships final between friend of the podcast, Dan Bigham, and Irishman, Philippe Ogana.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I do know this race, and it was ridiculous.
For the listener, I'll remind you of what happened.
Can I just segue quickly and say I was in Philippe Ogana's birthplace last week?
Were you? Where's he from?
Verbania.
He is, yes.
I messaged you. The weather was appalling. I was actually on the other side of the lake in a town called Stresa, and we went to, there are some islands that you can get a boat out to, which is very nice, but you can see Verbania from across the lake. And all I could think was, in the summer, this would be absolutely stunning because it's the Italian lakes. Today, it is awful. And B, I was looking at Verbania going, Philippe Ogana and Elisa Longo Borghini, born there.
Wow.
Yeah.
The photo you sent me was very uninspiring. Were you in Gaia's company at that point?
I was, yeah.
Did you tell her that Philippe Ogana and Elisa Longo Borghini were from over there?
What do you think?
Yeah, I'm sure you did. And what did you make of that? Was it
just doing who are they?
Right. So the individual pursuit. Now, for people that don't follow track cycling, I'll walk you through it. The individual pursuit is a 4-kilometer event that is done on a velodrome, and the riders start either side of the track. So one on the home straight, one on the back straight. It is Dan Bigham versus Philippe Ogana. Dan Bigham, the performance engineer, aerodynamicist at Ineos Grenadiers, and Philippe Ogana, the man who Dan Bigham is employed to make faster at Ineos Grenadiers. Bigham gets a lead and is winning, going into like the final 750 meters off the 4,000 kilometers. He's winning by like 2 seconds, which is huge. Then Ganna does what Ganna does. The world record holder in the individual pursuit does a Ganna turn and wins by 0.05 of a second, 0.054 seconds. It was in, obviously, home soil, on British soil for Bigham, and everyone was so, so impressed by what he'd done, but also so disappointed with him that he hadn't managed to pull off what would have been the steal of the century. At the time I wrote about it as Frankenstein taking on his own monster and almost winning. That's how I do, Tom. But for me, that was just breathtakingly good.
Yeah, another incident of I hated it because we love Dan, and that's no disrespect to Filippo Ganna, because I think he's probably quite a nice guy, but I think we would have all been pulling for Dan there. And yeah, just as you say, unbelievably impressive that Ganna can pull something like that out.
Yeah, I mean, it's the fact that Ganna is probably the best individual pursuiter ever.
Yeah,
and he's going up against Dan Bigham, who is a self-professed, like, unextraordinary person. Like, he says, he's one of those people that has worked on his athleticism so much that he's become so good. But he says himself, like, he has just worked on it, tapped into the aerodynamics, engineered his way to being 0.05 of a second off the greatest individual pursuit rider of all time.
Yeah, exactly. And look, we've seen Ganna do that on the track a few times, haven't we? He's got that. He's got that turn in him that just takes the race away from everyone else involved.
Yeah, and sadly, he took it away from Dan Bigham.
Yeah.
In general, Tom, I think, should we say Alison Jackson then as our race of the year winner?
Well, that's one we both had.
The official best race of 2023.
Yeah, we'll go and hand her the gong or whatever we have.
Another big cobble.
Yeah, exactly.
there you have it, Tom. I'm quite pleased with our set of awards there.
Do you have a rider of the year? Are we going to have an overall rider of the year? Who's getting our Velo d'Or?
I don't really have one, I don't think. I would say, I mean, it would probably, I don't know if it could be Mathieu van der Poel, because he kind of disappeared after like April. Oh no, after, he disappeared between
except
April
except for
and
when
August.
He won the world championship.
Except for when he won. I just thought that's where the big came in. I think I would give it to Lotto Capecchi, because, and I'm thinking off the hoof here, Tom, wins Flanders, wins the world championships, also wins two world titles on the track.
Yeah.
So she's won three world titles this year and the Tour of Flanders. And she came second at the Tour de France Femme, and held the yellow jersey for most of it.
Hard to argue with. Luckily, I mean, I have Mathieu van der Poel, so we can probably give a men and a women's rider of the year here and agree.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Just as I said earlier, you say he disappeared, but in my book, he won every race he wanted to win. He concentrated on them and he wasn't bothered about the ones he disappeared for.
Yeah, I think it's probably the same for Lotto Capecchi. She won every single race. Apart from Roubaix, she won every race this year that she wanted to win.
Yeah.
There you have it. If anybody disagrees with us, they can, which you won't, because this is the official awards of the year, the official team of the season.
So if you do disagree, tough.
This is the official unsung hero of 2023. but if you do disagree and want to voice your discontent, then you can reach out to us on social media. Tom, where can they do that?
You can. Well, we've already talked about the artist formerly known as Twitter. So we are on X and Instagram. Yep.
We're on Instagram only, in name only.
Yeah, at TTPDCST.
But we get the notifications on that account. So if you do want to...
Oh my word, it's annoying though. Every time I get an Instagram notification, it's from our one. I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah, yeah. Check out the best reels of the day.
Yeah.
right, go on. Sorry, I interrupted you when you were saying the handle.
TTPDCST.
There you have it. Tom, this...
Soon I will be tweeting out what we call someone from Flanders in English, because I actually want to know the answer to this.
Okay, good. I look forward to it. Tom, pleasure speaking with you. Thank you for so diligently researching and not annoying me this time.
Well, as always, next year.
Thank you to you, the listener, as well, for tuning in, as always. And we will be back when we're back.
Bye, everyone.
Take care. Thank you.